Welcome back into hour number three. I'm Jim Rome. I am back after a two-week break. I'm live in Southern California. It feels great to be here. Nice to have you here. What's cracking? This show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. As you know, the show is nationwide and in Canada, so if you want to call the program, it is toll-free. Go ahead and do so. 1-800-636-8686. More phone calls coming up, but as promised, we are joined by a UFC lightweight, former interim UFC lightweight champion. He is the number two UFC lightweight contender. He is number eight in the pound-for-pound rankings. He was named the recipient of the inaugural Forrest Griffin Community Award last month. He is the founder of the Good Fight Foundation. We are joined right now by Dustin Poirier. Dustin, it is great to have you on the show. How are you?
Great, man. Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Dustin, great to have you on. Listen, in fact, let me reset that. I want to say before we talk about your win over Dan Hooker, it's such an unusual time. So how are you and your family doing during this really, really unusual time?
We're good now, man. We're in Louisiana. Things are opening up a little bit. Obviously, we're still being very careful, but we're all healthy and everybody's good.
Good. Dustin Poirier, my guest. All right, so going back to the fight you had with Hooker at the Apex, it was a legendary fight. Take me back to before you stepped into the cage that night. What kind of thoughts were you having and what kind of a fight were you expecting?
I was expecting a fight similar to the one that played out. You know, I knew this guy. This was the biggest fight of his career, the biggest opportunity that he's ever had. You know, a win over me would have set himself up as a legitimate contender for the next title shot. And I knew he was busting his ass to be as prepared as he could be walking into the octagon that night. You know, I've been in the position before where I'm facing a guy higher in the rankings and everything matters, you know, in fights like that.
So you knew what that meant to him, but you also knew what it meant to you, especially coming off a long layoff. And I want to hit on that in a minute. But there was this great moment after the third round when you asked your corner, "How's my hair?" What's going through your head at that point?
You know, just because you're in a fight, you know, you got to keep the main thing the main thing. And the hair, I just needed to know if I was looking good or not.
I love it. We're talking to Dustin Poirier. That is that is the main thing. You have to keep the main thing the main thing. All right, so you come into that fight after a long layoff. And not only a long layoff, but you were coming off surgery. You had a ton of physical therapy in order just to get back in the cage. So how were you feeling mentally and physically in that fifth round of a battle, a war?
I felt good. I was a little tired, a little hurting, but that's what fighting's about. That's what you know. I expect to feel like that in main event fights. And but the road to get to that point, the road to get to fight night was tough on me, man. It was the longest layoff of my career. Had, like you said, a very serious surgery and a lot of physical therapy just to put myself in position to be able to do a training camp, much less push through the training camp. So I'm grateful, man. I'm healthy now. I'm feeling good, and I felt good on fight night.
So what was that like, that whole process? If that was like the most challenging time of your career, were there ever points where you thought to yourself, man, you know, I've had an amazing run. I've made my mark. My legacy is intact. For who? For what? Or were there never days like that, and did you always just push through?
You know, right after the Khabib fight, when I knew I needed to have surgery and I was coming off that loss, I'd be lying if I said there wasn't some down days. But anything I commit my mind to and focus on, I make happen. And I knew I was going to have a tough road back to the octagon, but I knew once I got in there that I was going to get my hand raised again. There was no doubt in my mind.
Dustin Poirier is my guest. Also, afterwards, you had a great quote. Quote, "A fight isn't a fight until there's something to overcome. We fought tonight." I love that quote. It seems like listening to you right now and watching your career, my sense from the outside is you've got a pretty good understanding of yourself as a person and as a fighter, and you know what you can do. But does that go up another level when you fight through everything that you fought through just to get to that fight, and then you fight through another five rounds of a fight like that, and then on top of that, you find a way to win?
It feels good, but like I'm not proving anything to myself. I know that I have that in me. I know I have that ability to dig down and push through adversity and suffer more than these other guys I'm fighting. I know I can do that. So I'm not surprised. I just want to be out there performing to the best of my ability. If I can reach what I'm capable of doing, I know I can be the world champion. It's just going out there and executing, really. To me, that's what I focus on.
Hey, Destin, that point about you're willing to suffer more than the other guys who are out there, like, what is that? Are you wired for that, or did you learn that?
I'm built that way, but I learned that I'm built that way through going through things like that. Like when I'm digging down and pulling out a round after losing a couple, I know that I have that within myself, and I found that out just through years of fighting and years of growing and maturing as a person. I know I have that in me, and I don't always want to show it, because that if I'm showing it, that means we're in a dogfight, and I end up in these kind of fights a lot.
Destin Poirier, my guest. And then how much of that is about physical toughness, and then how much of that is about mindset?
You know, I would say mindset would be more than the physical toughness part of pulling through those type of fights. You know, your mind is the strongest weapon in there. And if you can keep it in control and stay steering it in the right direction, and you know, it's easy to in those adversity, when adversity comes around, it's easy to start feeling and thinking to yourself, oh, I'm tired, or, you know, oh, if he gets a takedown, or there's moments in the fight where you can accept positions or you can make something happen. And I think that's all mindset. It's all digging down and being confident and being focused on the moment that you're in.
Destin Poirier is my guest. You also said something I thought was really interesting as well after the fight. You said that if you could fight without a crowd for the rest of your career, you'd do that. I find that interesting because a lot of fighters say, hey, man, I tap into the energy of that crowd. Why do you think that you're even more effective without it?
I feel like there's no distraction. No fans hanging over the rails when you're about to walk out, yelling stuff at you, spilling beer and being crazy. It just takes one more distraction out of the night, you know, because I'm there to execute and perform, and I'm trying to stay locked in. But whenever there's an arena that's empty like it was when I fought, and you get there right before you fight, you wrap your hands, you start warming up. It's just for some reason for me, you know, and every fight is different, but it was just one less obstacle on fight night to get over.
You know, I get it. I mean, like almost essentially every single athlete and coach I've ever talked to in my entire life, one of the first things they always talk about is eliminate distractions. You also had another great line. Dude, you had a lot of great lines after that fight. You had another great line. When you said the fight was over, you started immediately think about your family. Quote, I can be the tough guy, travel all around the world, fight these guys, get in bloody fights. I can come home and still be dad. I can play Barbies. It's not too much either way. It really balances me out. So, I mean, that's a great balance to have, and it's not an easy balance to get. How have you gone about developing that balance between work, especially when your work is your work, it's a violent work, and home life? How'd you achieve that balance?
I achieved it by doing it. By learning on the job and fighting and in parenthood, you know? I'm just in a good spot with that balance. It puts fighting in perspective. It kind of gives me a break at times from being the tough guy and being surrounded by fighters. Like I said in the quote, when I can come home and just be dad, I don't have to be the diamond. I don't have to be the tough guy, the cage fighter. I can just be dad. We can watch cartoons and I can play Barbies and be a father to a little girl and not even think about fighting. Because it's really hard for me any other time of my life to not be thinking about fighting. It's always in the back of my mind. I'm always thinking about something that has to do with combat sports, whether it's a positional thing or who I'm fighting next or what it's going to take to get me to align myself with another title shot. It just never stops. The wheels are always turning in my head. So when I can focus 100% on something else and give myself a little break and spend time with my daughter and do other things that gets my mind off of combat sports, I love it because I need that, because it's hard to stop this crazy brain of mine, man.
Right, and it wasn't always like that, right? As an example, you recently told Teddy Atlas that there was a time when fighting was your life, but now it's a part of your life. Like, when did that change, and how does that change feel? Like, is that a weight off your shoulders? And in fact, if you care a little bit less or you redistribute kind of some of that, does it make you a better fighter as a result?
It does, and I think we're seeing that. And I think it started happening, you know, when my daughter was born. And then I kept the juggling and balancing act up, was trying to be the best father and also be the best fighter and the best husband and all these other hats I wear. Just like I said, it puts fighting into perspective. It's just something I do very well, but it's just part of my life. whenever fighting stops, I'm still going to be a father, and I'm still going to be the president of the Good Fight Foundation, and I'm still going to be a husband. You know, realizing that and growing up in the sport and being more mature now lets me put it that way and lets me think of it that way, and I enjoy it, and I love fighting. But it's going to stop one day, and these other things will not. So I'm just enjoying the ride, you know, of everything.
Before you go, Dustin Poirier, my guest, I was going to ask you next about the Good Fight Foundation. In 2018, you and your wife started the Good Fight Foundation. For those who are not aware, what is the foundation about, and what inspired you to start it?
Me and my wife started the foundation 2 years ago, like you said, after I had started auctioning off some of my fight-worn things. I used to just auction it off, and then I would donate the money myself to causes in the community that I saw. And we decided to start an actual foundation and give it a name. That way it wouldn't be just like Dustin Poirier donates money to here or there. We can actually give it a name, identity, and try to raise money and let it grow naturally and see what happens. And it's done that, man. It's by far grown quicker than I ever could have imagined. And the goals we've met last year were amazing. You know, it was the first time we went outside of the United States. We went to Africa and got some wells dug there and bought a tribe some land. And you know, it's just amazing because it started off so small and so grassroots here in Lafayette, Louisiana. We were doing small things like donating the food shelters and just to see the road we've traveled in this short a time and how far the Good Fight has reached and the word has spread. It's amazing. I'm thankful, grateful, and I can't wait to see, you know, what this thing turns into if we keep pushing it the way we are.
What a great cause. That must feel amazing. And you mentioned Lafayette. You've been awarded the key to the city of Lafayette, Louisiana. What's it mean to you to be from Lafayette and representing them now on the biggest stage?
It's an honor. You know, I do it with pride, and I'm trying my best to do it the right way and give people the real insight of what we have to offer and the type of people we are: honest, hardworking, blue collar people who like to have a good time and like to support local businesses, like to support our culture here in Acadiana. And like I said, man, it's an honor to wear the Acadiana flag and represent Lafayette, Louisiana on the world scale.
All right, so one last thought. You made the point that in your career right now, you want to make or take fights that mean something, that add to your legacy. So if you're thinking about legacy going forward, what does that mean for who you'd like to fight next?
I don't know. I'm not sure what the options will be when the UFC comes back and starts, you know, sitting at the table to make these matches. It needs to be a really big name or a title fight. I've been doing this for 10 years in the UFC, and I still love fighting, but I want these fights to mean more than just a fight. Like, I don't want it to just be about a show and win purse, or I want it to be really mean something. And I know I'm on the back nine of my career. I've been fighting for a while. I have 40 fights, and I want these last 4 or 5 years to really mean something every time I get into the octagon. Not only for me and my family, but for the goals that I'm trying to bring awareness to and raise money for, and for my career. You know, I really want to leave a legacy.
He is the number 2 UFC lightweight contender. There's no doubt you're going to do that already. Number 2 in the lightweight division. He is number 8 in the pound-for-pound rankings. He was the recipient of the inaugural Forrest Griffin Community Award, which is a great honor, and the founder of the Good Fight Foundation. Dustin Poirier, my guest. Dustin, really good to have you on the show. Appreciate that conversation a lot, and I hope we can do it again soon.
My pleasure, man. Yeah, you guys shoot me an email. I'll be back whenever you want me.
Love it. Good stuff, man. Should have done it sooner. Dustin Poirier, my guest. We're always going to talk UFC on this program. I remember the first time I started to talk MMA, Dana White and I have had this conversation off air, and what the world was like then and what the sporting world's reaction was to it then and what some of your responses were then. A lot of people didn't get it. And even I was a, you know, a boxing guy through and through. But when I first started to see UFC and MMA, I'm like, wow, man, this is different. This is really interesting. Really different, but keep an open mind to it. Like, I got it. And there were a lot of you who did not. And even some people around me who, for whatever reason, didn't get it. There were just way too many people, like, I don't know, this guy David in Houston. What year was this, Alvin? This was 2008. And I'm talking about even back prior to this, but even as recently as 2008, I was still getting calls like this to the show when I interviewed Dana White or when I talked UFC.
If you really want to see a slugfest, watch the classic fights. Watch Robinson against any one of those guys, Sugar Ray Robinson. That's real fighting. This is just a sign of how society is decaying. It's not fighting. It's two guys, they throw punches, then they get on the ground and hump each other. It's disgusting, Jim.
That was an actual call to this show. That was not a crank call. That guy, you could hear it in his voice, man. Like, he was really offended. Quote, the UFC was, quote, an example of the decay of our society.
If you really want to see a slugfest, watch the classic fights. Watch Robinson against any one of those guys, Sugar Ray Robinson. That's real fighting. This is just a sign of how society is decaying. It's not fighting. It's two guys, they throw punches, then they get on the ground and hump each other. It's disgusting, Jim.
It's not fighting. Dude, have you, I mean, fair enough. This was back in 08 when that call came through. Anybody who says that it's not fighting, it's just two guys who get on the ground and hump each other, has never actually seen a UFC event. Because nobody, you might say to me, yeah, it's not for me, man. It's just, it's too much, or I don't like it, or that's fine. I'll respect that. But whatever you do, do not come up in here and tell me it's not fighting. Have you seen what happens to those who are different enough, courageous enough, and skilled enough to step into that cage? You don't end up looking like that if you're only humping. All right, there are people that are getting their faces broken and their jaws busted and their noses broken and limbs ripped off. Oh, it's fighting, all right. My man, David, he must not be a big fan of Habib, who is unbelievable on the mat.
So, no,
listen,
Jim.
It's not disgusting. It's not for everybody. Just whatever you do, just don't tell me it's not a fight. Oh, it's a fight. It absolutely is a fight. And also, when I started to get more and more into MMA and the UFC and Dana White coming on the program, I didn't just give up on boxing. Like, I don't like boxing nearly as much as I used to because there's not nearly as much to like as I used to. You know, the boxing that I grew up on, and this is one of the great things about UFC, and we can get into whether or not there's fairness for fighters and those issues, and there's some real questions to be asked. But the difference is, the boxing that I fell in love with was an era and a time where there were super fights. There were amazing fights. You don't see that anymore, and you haven't for a long time. The thing about the UFC is Dana White can say, hey, you and you fight. We get super fights over and over and over and over again. Another reason why I love that, I like that more and more each day, and I like boxing a little less. But there's still a lot to like about boxing. There's still stars in boxing. It's still a great sport. We just don't see enough of the great sport. But I used to get calls like, well, not quite like that. That call was a one-off. Nobody else ever called and said, hey, you want to see a fight? Look at the classics. But what these guys do now, that's not a fight. That's just two guys who get on the floor and they hump, and it's disgusting.
It's disgusting.
That actually was a disgusting call. It was then and it is right now. Okay, one more question. Did you listen to Dustin Poirier and come away any other way other than impressed? If he did, that's about you and not him. It's about the right stuff, and he's a warrior. And believe me, he is a, quote, fighter. All right, now I'm done. When we come back, what do you want to hit? I can hit the rando roundup. You try and say that. Rando roundup. There are a lot of things that happened while I was down. All of that is still ahead. Years of research, hundreds of tests, thousands of iterations, and the result? The latest and dreamiest in sleep innovation. Introducing the new mattresses from Casper. Casper has done it yet again. They've got all new mattresses. Are you waking up with back pain? Let me introduce Zone Support. Casper's unique ergonomic system designed to keep your spine aligned when you sleep. And there's something brand new called AirScape. Engineered foam layers with perforations that help regulate your sleep temperature. From bedding, bed frames, even a dog bed now, Casper's got everything you need to build the dream bedroom for every kind of sleeper. And now Casper is offering free contactless delivery and, as always, free returns. Go to Casper.com and use the code ROME for $100 off your mattress order. Code ROME for $100 off your mattress order. I mean, straight up, the Casper mattress is the best that I've ever slept on. Terms and conditions do apply. See Casper.com/terms. Casper.com/terms.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. We are close. We are convenient. We are known for our guaranteed everyday low prices. Excellent customer service from professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Say something else. As soon as I got into Eagle River, Wisconsin, population 1498, no lie, the first thing I saw was an O'Reilly Auto Parts store right there. It's a small town. Small town. So I immediately knew I was in the right place. Hey, Rome, I saw that going much different in my mind. Signed, Rome, coming back to his scale post-Wisco.
Saw that playing out differently in my mind.
Damasio in Albuquerque. Oh, no, I didn't. I knew exactly how that was going to go. And it went exactly the way I thought that it would go. Man, you know it goes badly when you get back on a Saturday night from a two-week bender and you're up at 4:30 a.m. Sunday morning to get on your bike, which is exactly what I did. That's how that went, and I knew it would go that way. At Down Dave tweets, Wisco misses you, Romy. Dave, Romy misses Wisco. Romy's happy to be back. The great thing about where I live and where I grew up and my deal now, I've been really fortunate to go to a lot of really, really unique places, but it's always good to get home. Always, no matter where I go, no matter how great it is, no matter how long I'm gone or not gone, or how short the trip is, it is always good to come home. Jamie in Green Bay tweets, the greens are weak. You're weak. Put those vegetables down. Curds are for closers.
The leads are weak.
Signed, Wisconsin.
The leads are weak. The f***ing leads are weak. You're weak.
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
The bleeping greens are weak. You're weak. Hey, can I tell you something? Curds are not for closers. I was there, man. Curds are for freaking everybody. You can't get away from them, man. They're everywhere. What do you mean they're for closers?
You're weak.
Young people, old people, skinny people, portly people. Trust me, they're for everybody. They're everywhere. They're not hard to find. Vegetables were. Cheese is not. Hey, Adam Hawk, I just feel like I should check in with you. What's up? Put them on, man. You awake? How you living,
yeah.
Dude? How you living? I've not really got caught up with you for the past 2 weeks. How you living?
I've never been better. It's great to have you back.
How do you always say, I almost went with an S-bomb. It literally just almost came out because I've been off for 2 weeks because it just seems so absurd. You always answer stuff like that. You're like an Eddie Haskell, except not cool like he was.
I don't know who Eddie Haskell is.
I figured.
But I will take that as a
compliment. How do you not know who Eddie Haskell is, dude? You're him with a cat tattoo and a mustache and none of the charm and talent and intellect. Eddie Haskell was like a smart aleck who basically always told the Beeves' mom exactly. He just charmed her. Like, he was super insincere and never meant what he said and always told people what he thought they wanted to hear. Kind of like what you do to me when I say, how are you, Hawk? Oh, I'm amazing. I'm the best I've ever been. When you know that's a lie, Hawk.
Well, today is a great day. It's a return to normalcy for us. I'm going to say too much, and I am going to instantly regret this and probably hear from it later, but there's something about the more lax feeling about, you know, the fill-in days where you kind of get a little complacent, if you will. So this is kind of like a let's go, let's ramp it back up to 12. There's a good feeling in that. You know, you wake up early, you get after it. There's some adrenaline with the show, and you just feel like you're operating at max capacity. And there's something to be said about that. There really is. It's preseason versus regular season.
You know, I would tell you how much I appreciate a statement like that, but I couldn't appreciate it any less than I do. In fact, in terms of you regretting that, you think? You absolutely should regret that statement. Be a professional, Hawk. You're supposed to show up here like the executive producer, no matter who's on the other side of the glass, and go all in every single day, every single show. How do you just admit to me that you don't go 100% when I'm not here?
I don't know. I don't know why I said it. Like I said.
I know why. You're not that bright, man.
Instant
and you
regret.
Have bad mindset.
Instant regret. But no, this is it's
now,
fun to be
now,
back
now
in full
done.
Speed.
That's what you get for trying to kiss ass, though. Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, good thing you're back, old man. Yeah. Bad take, man. Take them off. Dude, show up every single day like I'm here. Because, by the way, those guys that were here when I'm not here, freaking pros. Pros. I'm sure Bill Ryder loved hearing that. I'm sure Brian Weber appreciated that. Hey, let me ask you something, Hawk. When those guys come in here and they see you, they think to themselves, oh, I can go 50%. It's only Hawk. No, man. They come in here like, damn, showtime, go time. Why, Adam? Because they're professionals. Let me ask you something, Hawk. How about this? If you only go 50% when I'm not here, how does it grab you that now you're only going to get 50% of a paycheck when I'm not here? How's that sound? That sounds horrible, doesn't it? So give me 100%. You want 100% of your pay? Give me 100% of your effort. Dude, that was an all-time bad take. Now, if you just said that to get people to look at you and talk crap about you because you think it's show content, even that would make more sense to me. But then you'd be insulting me by saying, whoa, you're really struggling out there, host. You don't have enough to talk about. I'll give you something. Damn, Hawk.
I'm struggling.
Dude, my head hurts.
There's no ceiling for my stupidity.
I was so, I don't even know. See, it's on me. I should have never said, hey, Hawk, what's up? You know why? Because then you'll answer. I'm just going to stop now because believe me, I could run this rant out another 15 minutes. Damn, Hawk, like it all came rushing back. Man, I've just been on a high this whole show. I was off for 2 weeks and then bam, like you brought me back down faster than any idiot clone could with that take. That is terrible, Adam. Terrible. You know I'm going to regret this. When Hawk says, I know I'm going to regret this, what he means is we will all regret this. And never forget, the reason I hired him in large part was because a radio executive that used to employ him said to me, quote, one day we will all work for Adam Hawk. That's a true story. And I'm like, well, you run that big time radio station. You've been in the business a long time. You must be pretty smart, and you're telling me that you will work for Adam Hawk one day? I'm going to hire that guy.
Honestly, dream day.
Hmm. All right. Let me check some reaction before against my better judgment, let me check some reaction before I go to break. Jay Jackson tweets, Hawk doesn't know who Eddie Haskell is. Come on now, Rome. Clip this guy already. It's like the clones didn't have an issue with him not knowing who Larry Holmes was. What else? Who else did he not know? Anyway, that's all right. He can stay if he doesn't know who Larry Holmes is. Larry Holmes, who was the heavyweight champion in the world for 7 years. He didn't know him, but that was all right for some of you. But hell no. He didn't know Eddie Haskell. Clip this guy. Joe Theismann, you didn't know him either, right? Only in the middle of one of the most famous moments in NFL history. Dude, did you not know who Joe Namath was? When he had that moment with Susie Colbert?
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
Hawk's like, man, that clip's so funny. Who was that guy? Remember I called him on that? He's like, Johnny Unitas? You would not have fared well at trivia night at Eagle River, Hawk. I didn't go, but I know they have one. 45 got fat. Was Cody the Cat happy to see you? Normally something I get into with Hawk, but that's actually not a bad question. First of all, point of clarification. It's not Cody the Cat. It's Cody the Ragdoll Cat. Cody the Ragdoll Cat is the most arrogant, aloof cat that I know. Like, the dude knows how much I paid for him. He acts like it. And I was saying that, remember, my family left a week ahead of me, so I was there alone in the house with the cats. Which, believe it or not, and I'm not afraid to admit this, Hawk and I do have that in common. We're both, like, cat people. Yeah, like, I don't care, man. I haven't cared about a lot of things for a long time, but I really don't care how much you want to clown me for liking cats. I like cats, and I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm also not ashamed to say that Cody, the Cody the Ragdoll Cat is like this rock and roll legend. Yeah, and I'm digging. Now I'm like Hawk. I'm digging a hole, right? I don't care. Like, the cat is so cool, and the cat is so arrogant, and the cat is so aloof that it makes me like him even more, and then he knows it, and he treats me like crap. So when the family left for a week, I'm like, good, man. The kids are gone. The cat likes the kids better than me. Good. You got nowhere to go, do you, cat? Yo, Cody, how's that taste? You want food? Never mind that I feed the cat all the time, and it gets me nowhere. I'm thinking, they're gone. I'm the only one here. And can I tell you something? That dude treated me even worse. Didn't come around for a whole week. So, thankfully, when I did arrive home on Saturday night, homeboy's been cool. Me and Cody the Ragdoll Cat had a lot of quality time together yesterday. So, to answer your question, he's treating me better. He is. But that was yesterday. Let's see. Trevor Douglas is in. He tweets, so Hawk just tells his boss, I'm a lazy ass while you're gone. LOL, man. Your EP is awesome. He is, right? Ask him. The thing about Hawk is, he actually is awesome. Honestly, I can admit that too. My man, there's so many things that are so good about Hawk, but then he does stuff like that.
That's pretty awesome.
And then it's not awesome. It's awesome in its imbecility. Hey man, I probably shouldn't admit this, but like when you're gone, the cat that hit to coin a phrase, the cats will play. Like, dude, what, Bill Ryder, is he the substitute teacher? Like, come on, dude. Bill Ryder is an accomplished journo, dude. He is really good at what he does. I think you can give him better than 40%. Woody Jr., 67 tweets. Way to put Hawk in his place, Jimmy. You give 110%. Can we at least get 75% from this clown? See, that's not what he said. He does give me, well, he doesn't give me 110%, but he gives me like 80%. But when I'm not here, he only gives 30%. That's the problem. Ryan Chaney tweets, just when I thought that Hawk could not top himself telling Jim that he doesn't watch sports. That was a low point. Squirrel2 tweets, Hawk only gave 50% while I was in. Now I know how his teachers felt. Yours, Brian Weber.
Scribbins has an answer.
Trevor Douglas is back in. He's all over this topic. I'm beginning to think the person who suggested that Adam Hawk, or who suggested Adam Hawk, must not like you. Maybe she didn't. Yellow Robot tweets, Hawk is Eddie Haskell. You got to look at some clips of Haskell a little bit later on today, Adam. You'll know what I'm talking about. An extremely D-baggish. Actually, it's kind of funny, man. Haskell was funny in that he was so full of crap. All he did was tell people what they wanted to hear, smarmy as hell, and thought he was getting over all the time. And really wasn't. I mean, even the Beeve was onto him. Just like we're all onto you, Hawk. I don't need that, man. I know you try and do what's best for the show and provide content. We don't need that kind of content, man. That content for days. I've been on for 2 weeks. You think I can't? Now you're insulting me. You think I can't carry 3 hours when I've been off for 2 weeks? Like I said, this rant could go on for another 30 hours, much less 30 minutes. I'm going to get out right now. Hey, Rome. How does Hawk not know Haskell? Does he know the Beeve? I don't know, James Kelly. Why don't you ask him yourself? Kelly's another one, man. He thinks he's getting over. Like he's going to sneak in this little text to me like I won't know it's from him. Hey, James, it comes up Big Head Kelly in the contact. I know it's you, dude. You ask him. Like, when the suits say to me, hey, Jim, I need you to respect the clock, but if it's really important, you can float out. I don't think they meant me talking crap about my staff floating out to 38. That's exactly what I did. I'd like to apologize to Adam. Well, that segment didn't go very well for Adam Hawk, nor the rest of us. Time to answer your Ask the Pros question, where you, the clones, get to submit a question at cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. And it's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts. For all your car care needs, get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service. At O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. As I'm looking for one of them, let's get a telephone call in here. Let's go back to Wisconsin. I was there for 2 weeks. Obviously, I can't get away. I don't want to get away. Wisco is awesome. Susie in Wisconsin joins us. Susie, how are you?
Hey, Jim. Welcome back from the Badger State.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for taking my call again. And your show hasn't really been the same since you left, and neither have I. I was eager to share with my dad our previous conversation that we had live on the air.
Susie, so really, let me jump in. Susie, for those who did not hear that conversation that you were going to share with your dad, remind the folks what you and I talked about when you called.
Yeah, so I kind of threw out to the universe, as I said, that I wanted a sign and I want a connection with my brother. And it was right before his birthday was going to happen on July 4th, and he passed away about 5 months ago. Your show came along. I definitely felt like he absolutely would have loved it. And his sarcasm and wit and everything really reminded me of you as well. So
I know that's a really difficult thing to talk about, but I thought it was such a powerful moment and such a powerful call that I just wanted to reset that. So thank you for that. And then you found your dad and you had a conversation with him. How did that go?
Well, I was eager to share, and I wanted to send him the link to our conversation on jimrome.com. So he could listen for himself, but my dad's not the most technically savvy guy. And when I say that, I mean he thinks that a text message and a facsimile are the same thing. So it could be worse. At least I'm not asking Rit from the back row to find the sound drop for a golden ticket. So I decided to pick
Take
up the phone
Rit.
And just tell him about it myself. And
now, did he know?
Every morning when I wake up, I prepare for the unexpected, but nothing could have prepared me for this. I asked him if he was familiar with your show, but when I mentioned your name, the first thing that came out of his mouth was, oh, yeah, the Rubadonga guy. not exactly, but good grief.
Oh, no, exactly. He's right.
Yeah. So I was like, well, kind of. The last thing a grown woman ever wants to hear come out of her dad's mouth are the words Rubadonga. That is, unless you're from Buffalo, where it's a family tradition to throw an RD on the football field. Anyways, thanks for taking my call, and your show does continue to change my life, and you now have a new old listener in Wisco who will learn that your show is about much more than a Rubadonga. War Bills fans using Rubadongas as confetti, War Lady Clones, and On Wisconsin. Oh, and last but not least, if you were curious possibly why Wisconsin lizards are better, I believe they use custard instead of ice cream, which has egg yolk in it. Makes it silkier and creamier.
Susie Racker. Nice job, Susie. Thanks for making it better. On Wisconsin. All right. Maybe I don't know better. I just got a text from my son that just popped in. He's so funny. In the middle of this whole conversation, I know he's not listening. Jake, who's been now in Wisconsin 3 weeks, says, quote, how's healthy eating? I miss it. This is a kid who goes to school in Wisconsin. It's good, son. I mean, I've done it for all of 24 hours. So Susie just said the reason the blizzard tastes so much better is they don't use ice cream. They use custard. That makes it silkier and smoother. And she also said that when she said to her father, who she did not know whether or not he knew of me or the show, his response was, oh, yeah, I know him. He's the Rubadonga guy.
Rubadonga.
And Susie said, well, not really. And I had to correct her and say, well, actually, yes. I am the Rubadonga guy.
Rubadonga.
I'm still looking for an ATP. Let's see. Jimmo's. What was the biggest bug that you saw in Wisconsin? Man, I hate to jinx this. It was not that bad of a bug trip. There are these giant fireflies, I think, maybe, that were on my dock. But man, I expected like crazy, like pterodactyl type things. It was not that bad at all. I know it's going to get worse. I've been there when it's worse. Hell, those horse flies I used to see in Montana in the summertime were way worse. Not that bad. Jimmo's, if Eagle River is really a lake, what does that make Lake Cranberry? A river? No, smartass. I said Eagle River is not the lake. Eagle River is the town. Eagle River is the town. And we're on Catfish Lake, which is part of a chain of lakes, which includes Cranberry Lake, where I dropped my phone. Nice try with that. It's like that guy, Larry Anderson, who's like, hey, man, if you park on a driveway, how come you don't drive on a parkway? Or yeah, good one, Andy Rooney. Like, why does sour cream have an expiration date? Hey, don't be that guy, Brent. We're not out of time. Almost, but not quite. Or actually, we kind of are. Huge Call is brought to you by Grainger. As you get back to business, Grainger is there to help with supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, safety recovery guides, 24/7 support, and more. Visit Grainger.com/recovery. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. Good day today. First day back always is a good day. The second day back is the big day. See if Hawk has any more adrenaline left for the second day. I wouldn't bet on him. My thanks to Charles Robinson, Ben Golliver, Dustin Poirier. You know, 80% of the XR4TI, or the part of the XR4TI that actually tried its hardest. Thank you very much for listening, and I am back, and it's great to be back. More of the same tomorrow. Maybe you got to knock off a little bit of rust yourself. Don't forget, we will have a podcast on Wednesday, as we do every single Wednesday, and that's that. I promise you I will be back here tomorrow for more of the same. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. We're out.